The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO. And, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Happy 2016. Welcome back to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast, episode 23. My name is Jason Bryant. Today, joined by the World Wrestling Resource staff, John McGovern, Dennis Hall, and Terry Brands. Today, our main topic of discussion will actually center around Mr. Terry Brands in the film that came out via Flow Wrestling, the documentary. And first of all, before we get into the film, I just want to ask, first of all, let's start with John, the head coach of the University of Dubuque. It's been a while since we've had an episode. How's it been with the family, with Christmas, the holidays, and your season?
Oh, it's been going great. We got a newborn son. He's about a year and a few months, and he's learning how to do some footwork, fast footwork and gymnastics and tumbling, and it's just a lot of fun over Christmas to have a son and just family, spend time with family. And our team, it's been on a, they were on a 7-duel win streak after Christmas, and we got one of our wrestlers, Adrian Collier, is a top three on a pin record for Division Three. I think Christopher Charzipa from Williams is first, and then Josh Thompson from Messiah, and then Adrian Collier. So he's been kind of pinning streak, so that's been fun.
How's your son's level change? My daughter's level change is better than mine ever was.
Yeah, they can squat under anything. They got flexible knees. They can get low.
Dennis, you've got like 15, 16 kids at this point. I mean, what's it been like around your wrestling household up there in Wisconsin?
Well, it's been great. You know, the holidays were good, reflecting on Christ. And for me, it was just all about family and enjoying the time that I have with them. You know, right now, I've been working on a program for helping kids get stronger. Got that almost done and ready to release to the wrestling world and other sports, too. Right now, it's a good thing. I got Ben Provisor back in Stevens Point. He's training full time with me, and I'm looking forward to coming down to Iowa City and visiting there during the Olympic trials with Provisor.
Coach Brand, same general question about the holidays, of course. Then we're going to touch on that little event you guys had, something in Kinnick. But first of all, how's the holiday season? How did that treat you?
It's always good, you know. You make the best of it, and you know, during wrestling season, it's always, you know, as a wrestler, you don't get a lot of the same things that the rest of society does, and that makes it even that much more special and that much more energetic from where I'm at. It's really one of those things where, you know, you're celebrating really your entire existence with, you know, the birth of Jesus and that kind of thing. So, you know, we make the best of it here in Iowa, and our family, you know, like these other two guys said, I think we work hard at it, doing the right thing and holding people accountable, the youngsters, when they need that. And I got a couple of teenagers, so it's a daily occurrence now.
Grapple at the Gridiron, one of the biggest events in wrestling's history, a dual meet between Iowa and Oklahoma State. Outside, you couldn't have asked for better weather. I came down and made the drive down and had my first real wrestling tailgate, followed by the match, then a little bit of a football tailgate hosted by the Hawkeye Wrestling Club. And, you know, with the football excitement, that was the way it was in Iowa City, of course, eventually that culminated into a Rose Bowl berth, and, you know, having undefeated Iowa on the football team, playing against Minnesota, you know, right after that duel. It really, Terry, it was kind of the perfect storm to get that huge crowd there at Kinnick.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, Coach Ferentz had said in a meeting or press conference later that there was never better energy that he could remember in all the years that he's been at Iowa, both as a head coach and as assistant coach with Hayden Fry. And that was pretty, that was a noteworthy thing that he said that caught my attention right away. And, you know, with the success of his program this year and the way they were, and I think the hangover, or, you know, the hang under, whichever way you want to say it, from that wrestling match, and Ferentz actually letting us get on his field, you know, was pretty magnificent in itself. The way that our administration, you know, went to bat for us, and the way that Ferentz said, yeah, let's do it. And, you know, the way they laid out the apron around the mat, the way they put the flags in on the north side of the end zone there, or on the north side of the mat there. I mean, that was just, you know, it wasn't like we just threw a mat down in the football field. It was planned out. It was a lot of energy. And, you know, we had a marquee matchup with, you know, possibly the two of the best programs in wrestling, you know, history, and they were going at it. So you could have, and then, you know, God just decided to drop that weather in there, you know. You know, I mean, I was sweating. It was hot. You know, it was coming on, the sun coming off the bat. I mean, you couldn't have ordered it any better. You really couldn't have.
Yeah, because a week later, there were pictures tweeted from Kinnick Stadium. It was covered in snow. 1 week afterwards, we had snow on the ground. So, yeah, I guess the wrestling gods responded. One thing I also want to ask your coaches, football fields are 50 yards wide. You actually, how many steps do you think you got in going back and forth? You had a lot more room to move around than you do at Carver Hawkeye.
Well, the officials keep a tight watch on that, so there really wasn't much of that. You know, they have this silly rule that you can't move out of this box. So, you know, we're just trying to keep our team moving and motivated and communicate to them, but ultimately it's going to be on them. But, you know, the thing is we got Oklahoma State and John Smith, and when Tom brought it to Smith, he was like, yeah, let's do it. He didn't even hesitate. He was all about it. That, you know, those are the things that really made this thing come together. Is you got two programs early in the season. Who cares? Let's go, you know. It doesn't matter if they threw a mat down when nobody was watching or whether you throw a mat down in front of, you know, 45,000 fans. You just go in and you wrestle as hard as you can, and that's pretty much what happened. And then, you know, you give the show to the fans. And again, like you said, you haven't seen anything like this for, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, maybe. Kaminsky Park, going back to, you know, Frank Gotch's matches with, you know, the Hackenschmidt and those guys. So I, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, we were fortunate enough to be, you know, part of that.
I want to go over to Dennis now. Dennis, what were your impressions of the atmosphere from where you saw it?
Yeah, pretty cool. I think it's a great event. I mean, great way to promote the sport.
And internationally, it's not out of the realm of, well, actually, I wouldn't say out of the realm of possibility. It's actually happened where there have been international events wrestled outside. Dennis, have you ever competed in any of those type of events?
No, I mean, you have some stadiums that are covered a little bit, but where the sun's coming in, I mean, I remember the Olympic trials in 92 in Concord, California, where it was outdoors, kind of. It was under a pavilion, but still, when that sun came in, the mat got pretty hot. So it was a great experience for me to wrestle in that.
Coach McGovern, your general thoughts about the grapple on the gridiron and its impact that's going to be felt beyond the sport of wrestling. I mean, this thing was making headlines all over the place.
Yeah, it seems like it's the standard and across the world. I mean, not just in Iowa and bringing it together, but for Olympic wrestling, and it's just great for the sport overall. I mean, is that the most fans ever at any wrestling event?
Oh, it's, you know, without question. I think now the point is we're seeing it and it's like, okay, well, we've got the record. Well, okay. Now the teams that want to try to get the indoor record now they're clarifying. It's like, oh, largest outdoor record and then indoor record. I can see that coming down the pipe too, with some of these stadiums. Like, well, we can't really put 40,000 people into
insert arena here. We're just going to call that the outdoor record, but I think that's more tongue-in-cheek humor than it is anything else. But moving on to our topic today, you can see where that one's kind of leaning. I'm kind of looking at your direction, Bryce Jordan Center State College. But, we kid. But the topic today is about Terry, and Terry's been part of this show and the World Wrestling Resource for a number of years. But always one of the most energetic, engaging, fiery personalities within the sport of wrestling. People say that the difference between Terry and Tom is Mike Durow, I think, said it pretty well in the film. We won't actually say that on the show, but Terry a little just a skosh more fiery, or maybe Tom's a little more polished in terms of the head coaching. And I've got to do this a little bit different. Terry, you're kind of known to be a little more, I don't know if spastic's the right word, but how would you describe yourself to the wrestling community, or for people that don't know you, and maybe the difference between you and Tom in terms of demeanor?
I don't know how to answer that, and I'll let you guys, you be the judge of that. I think the thing from, the most important thing is that I'm fighting for my guys, and it's never personal. And I know the officials sometimes, they maybe take it personal, but let's be fair to both sides, and let's just say it the way it is. The way that I feel is there is definitely a little bit of a double standard there, the way that they treat our corner compared to the rest of the country. And that's just a fact. I mean, anybody watching, whether you're objective or subjective, knows that. So, let's be fair there. Number one. And then number two is I'm fighting for our guys. Tom's fighting for our guys. Our staff is fighting for our team, and we're not going to let, persons, intimidate or take calls away from us. And if they do take those calls, they got to hear it. That's accountability to me. That's the way I was raised. That's the way I was coached. That's how Coach Gable was. And so that's where I'll leave it right there. How's that?
Well, you're going to touch on a topic we'll approach later in the show here, but I want to start with the concept behind the documentary and wrestling documentaries. They're not that many. And I know Flo has done a great job at putting some out there. They had the Colette documentary prior to yours coming out. Yours was a feature 80-minute where they didn't break it up into parts. And so you talked a little bit about it on Flow Wrestling about the start of the process. But, what made you say, all right, guys, you can turn the cameras on. Let's do this.
Well, they wanted to do basically where it started is they wanted to come in and do something on Iowa wrestling. And then, we got together as a staff and we were kind of against that. And then, Morningstar and Tom were like, well, we'll have Terry do it. Kind of like that old Mikey Life commercial, you give it to Mikey because Mikey likes it and everybody can eat it, And that's kind of how I felt about it. And I was, all right, you guys want to be that way? Let's go. And then they came in and all I really said to Bader was, make sure the camera's running when you get on my property. When you come across the property line, make sure the camera's running because I'm not good at ad-libbing things. And, from there, he just kept digging and he kept asking these questions that nobody has really asked. And maybe only, Dennis Hall and my brother and my wife have ever really even understood, me as a person. Those are probably the only three, maybe my dad a little bit, that have ever really understood how I feel about a lot of those issues. And he was kind of going into a place where it really wasn't any of his business. And I was, I remember he shut the camera on. I was like, hey, you're asking some really tough questions here. And he just kind of shrugged his shoulders. And I said, let's go with it. And I think when they got back to Dallas and started, or Austin, and started breaking down the video, and you saw Bader's blog, I think he said that there was a lot there, and the more that they started looking into, Kendall Cross, I wish they would have interviewed Dennis. I wish they would have interviewed John Bartis, because those are two perspectives that would have, I thought, would have really enhanced. But what they did was decide that this thing is going to be good for advancing the humanity side of wrestling forward. And, I saw about 12 minutes of it. And, I kind of was like, hey, Martin, you got me kind of going like this direction. And he was like, and finally he said, you got to trust me. And at that point, you know, we're a year and a half later from the original interview. At that point, I was like, okay, I trust you. Go with it. And I haven't seen the film. I haven't watched it. I don't know the content of it. I do know how it ends just because it's my life or how it's going to end when I'm 6 foot under. And, you know, he I've heard nothing but great comments on it, nothing but great comments. And so he, you know, fulfilled his promise that, hey, trust me, it's going to be okay. And when he said that, I was good with it. I turned it over and I was good.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I want to open this over to John, first of all. And John, what were your impressions of it, having, you know, known Terry for a number of years?
I thought it was great because you get to see, you know, the life story and the lessons behind the scenes. And, you know, Terry's a guy that seems like character and just like he said, tell people like it is. He'd tell it to your face, and he's real honest. I remember when I was at the Hawkeye Club, there was a time where when Tom and Terry were there that, you know, they led the values of the respect and leadership and dedication and discipline. And I just remember, like, if you worked hard and you had that work ethic, there was respect from that in the room and a lot of loyalty in there. And I don't know if Terry, if you remember this, I can't remember who it was. We were locked in the sauna and Gable closed the window there, and there was a heavyweight that kind of broke down. And I can't remember if it was you or your brother. They went out and they started hand fighting him afterwards. And but it didn't seem like it was to hurt him, but it was to kind of toughen him up. And it felt like there was always that tough love being around him. I mean, really good guys at core. So that was good for people to see that. And then I don't know if you watch it, it definitely makes you feel like you're back there. It's like, man, it gets you going.
Dennis, obviously having spent a lot of time with Terry over the years in training, obviously the different styles notwithstanding, relationship there is strong. Were you surprised at the amount that you saw Terry open up on film?
Actually, I to be honest, I watched the trailer. I didn't watch the whole thing, and I didn't watch it on purpose because I know what Terry's about. I don't need to watch an hour of my life or hour and a half, whatever it is. But I did get a lot of comments from people and questions on their behalf about, and they just said, is Terry really like that? I said, from the trailer, I said, yeah, that's the way he operates. I said, it's all telling you the truth, it's telling you like it is. And, you know, he doesn't care if he offends you, you know, and I think that's the difference between Tom and Terry. Is Terry is a little more direct, and when he sees something that he believes in, you know, he'd probably fight till he dies, you know, and Tom will, and not that Tom won't change, but he'll, you know, Terry's one way, man. And, you know, so for me, with knowing Terry as well as I do, I just have the utmost respect for him. The guy always tells you like it is. And, you know, he's helped me and I've helped him through some difficult things. And, you know what, I wouldn't want another guy in my corner besides him, you know, and, hopefully they did him justice. I know from the trailer, you know, from what I saw, it was exactly the way everyday life operates when you're dealing with them.
Terry, how difficult is it for you to talk about yourself at that length?
I don't think it was, you know, that difficult because we weren't talking about, you know, the world championship wins. We weren't talking about a lot of that. You know, they covered that, but, you know, it's a lot easier for me to, you know, talk about the shortcomings and the reasons why, you know, I'm not successful or wasn't successful, and then being able to apply it back into your coaching or your life application skills, you know, that kind of thing. So it wasn't that hard. The thing that was hard was reliving about it. I've never seen the Iranian match in the Olympics. You know, I've never watched the Kendall Cross matches. So, you know, some of that stuff was really hard and to be asked about. And, you know, and then somebody said that Kendall Cross was in there and he was interviewed. And, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know what he had to say about me. I imagine it wasn't you know, great, but it probably wasn't bad. I think he probably respects me as a competitor, and that's how I felt about him. He was an intense competitor, somebody that I was going to have to go through. So, you know, talking about him and talking about the beer wasn't as much of the problem as about the loss. You know, and that's why I was kind of alluding to the fact that, you know, Dennis and I, we spent a lot of time together when I was going through that period of time. And he's been through it too. You know, he got a little bit of a tough call there in Atlanta, and, you know, he's got the same type of situation going on that I went through. And so, you know, it was confusing. It was liberating. It was prison. It was, you know, joy. It was, you know, it was every emotion that you could imagine out of a wrestler coming out there. And, you know, there were times when I wanted to get up and say, you know what, Vader, you know, you're off. I'm done with you. Because he did. He did push a little bit. And you know, I'm glad he did. It was therapeutic, you know, in a sense.
When you talk about those losses, those Sting wrestlers all deal with that. Was there any topic that you kind of maybe told Vader, and I from everything I've heard and I've seen, obviously, I've seen the movie, but everything I've heard from the reaction of Vader's Q&A was fantastic, but was there anything you told him that says, hey, we're off limits, we're not touching this?
Not one thing. I never said off the record. I never said, don't print that. Nothing that he asked. I asked him to not go there with it. You know, the only thing I said to Martin was, if you're going to make me look like a hothead when I get beat, then you better show some of my other side. You know, and that was the only thing that I said to Martin. And he said, trust me. And I did. I turned it over at that point.
John, I want to circle back with you now in terms of other things that you saw out of the film that really kind of opened people's eyes. You know, you've seen the Hawkeye Club in that perspective. What are some things that you've heard that the wrestling community may not have known about Terry Brands that this film kind of exposed? Or actually not exposed, but opened up?
Well, coming back to make the Olympic team, I mean, there was no guarantee, and he had to put it all out there, his heart out there in that match with Bowman's. I mean, he had his arm was hurt, and that was a tough match. I mean, physically, mentally, and just he said he was blacking out. I mean, to win that match the way he did, and he put his heart on his sleeve and put it all out there to make the team, and then to, you know, persevere through all that and then get to the, you know, Olympics, and then, you know, what you talked about, I kind of use this a little bit, Terry. I mean, you can be one of the best in the world and still sometimes, you know, I don't want to say much about that because I know it's personal behind the scenes, but on that match in the Olympics and asking the coach, you know, what leg to lead, and sometimes, you know, he made adjustments in the match, and then it looked like on the film he beat the Iranian and then didn't get the call, and he doesn't make excuses. That's just how he is, and he continues to learn from it, and I think it makes him why he's USA Wrestling's Coach of the Year and one of the best coaches out there, and he's trying to make sure everybody gets all their ducks in a row and lives a life of discipline and doesn't have those regrets. So I think it keeps him fired up and keeps him one of the best coaches ever. Uses that as a positive, it seems like.
Terry, one thing that was in the film that it's kind of this Brand's lore, you know, how the stories that take a mind of their own, they start living. And, you know, what was a 30-yard chip shot field goal was now 20, 30 years later, an 80-yard field goal into the wind in a blizzard. One of those stories was the story about the officer pulling you over and thinking it was Tom and not Terry. How much truth was behind that story? I mean, what is that story, the way it gets told, how accurate is it?
That story is dead true. And I think somebody told me that Gable told that.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that story is true. And that happened to me. And I was going back to see my grandma who was living with cancer. And, you know, it was right after the NCAA tournament. So that was the part that they missed. I think they said that it was after the trials or something in 96, but it was actually after the 91 NCAA championships. and she was her last leg, and I was driving through Sheldon coming up Washington Avenue, turned off to 16th Street and heading up, and this guy stopped me, that's a true story.
Oh man, because those are things that when you hear them from people, you kind of like, oh, okay, you know, it's one of those, it's a story again that takes a mind of its own. And then you hear it from Gable on the film, and it was like, it really brought some real clarity. I'm like, wow, oh wow. It's sometimes the true story is much more engaging and entertaining than maybe the story that it becomes. And another thing, another thing about that is the humor. There are moments of intensity throughout the film. And Flo did a little clip of like the top 10, top 20 lines from the film. And it seems like even with your intensity and I guess brashness, there's humor that comes out of that. It's, you know, the haters gonna hate, running up the stairs. And then, you know, I'll take you out when you bump into Tali Thompson. That stuff, people, like, they didn't look at it and go, oh my gosh. They looked at it and they started laughing because it's like it opened up. It showed a realness and an intensity there. What is it about when you get into a coaching situation? Do you forget that the cameras were on you? I mean, how much do you dial in? And, you know, you kind of like, is it an out of body experience? It's like, you're fighting for your guys, and then what you say is just what comes out of your mouth.
I don't think it's calculated, but I also don't have any regret. It's one of those things where it's raw and it's emotion and it's real. It's true. You know, he ran into me, and this is the funny thing about it, is, you know, he's running into me. His guy got beat. My guy won. You know, so, you know, it's not me. It's not like I'm the poor sport here, and that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. And even with some of these guys, you know, like Stornio over at Northwestern, he's always jawing at me, but the only time we're jawing is when his guy loses. So, you know, that doesn't make sense to me. And you know, that's the understanding part, that it's raw. It's real. I'm fighting for my guy. You're going to go running into me. Let's go, man. You want to drop me on my head? Drop me on my head. But I'm not going to lay down and let you drop me on my head. You know, it's that kind of a thing. And as far as the camera, they did a good job of I didn't really remember a lot of the camera being around. They did a good job with that. And Chad Leathers, the guy that did that, he's a good person. And I actually would consider him a friend over all of this, because he was very, very patient. He wasn't in the way, and he was very respectful. So, you know, I don't know. You know, again, it's something that, you know, you guys have to, you're ultimately going to, you know, make your, you know, frame the way that I am based on whatever. And so it is what it is. That's me. When Tony Ramos beat Cologne, that's me. That's me, you know. And when I'm talking about you can't handpick the team when Dennis was wrestling, what's his name in that match, you know, they can't handpick the team. I believe that. How'd that guy get in the trials? Well, they let him into the trials. Why did they let him in the trials? Because they wanted him to do really well and to, you know, do some damage in there and stir things up. Well, we're not going to let that happen. We're not going to get pushed around. We're going to go in. You're going to tell us we got to wrestle that guy, but we're not laying down for it. You know, that kind of thing. And that's kind of the raw emotion in the reality of, you know, what it's like here in, you know, the Hawkeye wrestling room. You know, every day you fight, you get what you earn. You don't fight, you get what you earn. Either way you look at it, either way that you do it or you don't fight, you're going to get what you earn, which way you want to be. You know, and that's kind of where a lot of that stuff goes.
Dennis, when it comes to the sport of wrestling, again, Flow Wrestling is put out a bunch of these documentaries, and they've really amped up their games. Some are smaller than others. But when it comes to pulling back the curtain, how much do you think this type of situation, had it been done when you were competing, may have opened the doors for maybe the younger generation to have a greater admiration for every international wrestler, every world medalist, every Olympian, because the opportunities for this type of film would have existed, you know, 20 years ago? What do you think that the impact on maybe Terry and Colette and some of the other college vignettes are having on the sport of wrestling we're seeing things that have never been done before.
I think it's great. I think it's showing winners' mentalities. Biggest thing is you got to put yourself around people that are successful. I mean, and that's part of the reason Terry and I got along so well right off the bat. He came, in 96 after he lost at Cross. He comes out to the Olympic training camp, doesn't want to be there. He just got off his, I believe you drove your motorcycle, if I remember correctly. Am I right?
Yes.
The camp? Yeah. And he comes in and he goes, oh, I got to learn how to do a gut wrench and defense. So we just started, we talked a little bit. And, I mean, it gives you a feeling of knowing the people that pioneered the sport. And to me, that the way winners think, I mean, there's all types of things that go on. I mean, the heart of a champion, if you want to read a good book, read that book. It puts you in everybody that's been successful in sports inside their minds. And I think with these things that they're doing right now, it gives different looks. It gives people the understanding of how you come back from setbacks. Everybody's going to have a setback in their life, and you got to figure out how to bounce back. So I think it's a great thing that they're doing things like this.
John, you consume a lot of media in this respect. What are some of the reactions that you've heard and seen that this type of documentary around wrestling, these documentary series are having on the sport of wrestling as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's just like Dennis said, it helps the guys see how you live your lifestyle and how you stay dedicated and disciplined and beyond just the training, the mindset and thinking. And I always saw Terry and was very dedicated, like on the weekends. Like I lived at the Olympic Training Center and I saw how some of the guys, what they would do on the weekends. And Terry was very dedicated and disciplined in his approach. And I feel like a lot of wrestlers sometimes miss that you got to do a lot of little things right to make a difference, because everybody's at that point is pretty talented, and that lifestyle starts to show and just being around those people. But yeah, a lot of our college guys and everybody, they love it. I mean, it keeps them fired up and passionate about the sport, and they feel connected to their wrestling history and past and the wrestling leaders.
Terry, circling back to you, there was nothing in the 80 minutes about your experience with Foxcatcher. How much of that was brought up in conversation? And, was that a topic that...
It was not brought up. It was not brought up. I think maybe we talked about training, maybe any, talk about was DuPont crazy, how was Schultz, this, that, and the other thing,
Because there was the controversy surrounding it, of course, after Dave was killed, and involving athlete funding. How do you answer those questions at this day and age, especially since Foxcatcher and then Mark Schultz's book and then the ESPN 30 for 30? It's kind of exposed with that club, the crazy man behind the club. And, I guess the controversy that involved you and a couple other athletes in that time.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great question and very fair and find them, And what I mean by that is, the thing is when you look at the situation, and I love it, even guys like Kevin Jackson, I knew he was crazy. I knew he was going to kill somebody. He said that in that newspaper. That's bull. That's bull. If anybody in there knew that he was going to kill somebody, and for them to stay around, it's simply not true. That's not what human beings do. They don't stay in a situation that threatens their life. And so for people to even say that, oh, yeah, I knew he was crazy and he was going to do that, it's simply not true, number one. Number two, Dave Schultz, I had a conversation with him. I went to a city out with him in October of 95, and he was with DuPont. And he was good. They had a tight relationship. He was there to help us and coach us. It was in 1995. We went over there. The World All Stars or the World Champions that weren't from Russia went to a city to wrestle the Russian All Star team in a dual meet. And Schultz was there as one of the coaches for the U.S. guys. It was me, Angle, can't remember who, maybe Melvin Douglas was there, Baumgartner. And, you know, Schultz was just adamant about the team thing, about, you know, bonding together. He always was in my corner, you know, as a fellow fox catcher, if I can say that. And, you know, and then when I got back, I had a conversation with him right before Christmas in 95. So, you know, he got shot in 96, January of 96. So in you know, this is when I heard that everything black got kicked off the farm. They couldn't have the black Jeep. They couldn't have the black strength equipment in the room. They couldn't have the black dumbbells in the weight room, this and that. So I called him. I go, hey, what's going on, man? And he was like, hey, it's no big deal. You know, we just got to stay together and keep together as a team. So when he got shot and killed and Bev Collier kind of took control of the club, it wasn't about disrespect to Dave or Nancy or any of his closest friends on the farm. It was about, you know, me and Tom, you know, going forward with what Dave actually was talking about. And that was not let's not have more drama. Let's stay together. Let's band together. Let's be together on this thing. And that's how I thought about it. And to this day, you know, you're right. It was a little bit of a firestorm in there. And you know what? I'm going to say something that's never been said before, too, is Bev called Tom after the 96 Olympic gold and offered to give him his $50,000 bonus check, and Tom didn't take it. And you know, those are things that, you know, all these loudmouths, they want to, oh, yeah, these guys, blood money this, blood money that. And it simply wasn't that way. My relationship with Dave Schultz was special because of the relationship he had with Mark. And because of the way that my brother and I revered Mark and Dave, I remember, you know, Mark Schultz's, you know, quote in 84 when he said, I'm sorry to perceive me as an element of danger. I'm only interested in winning, finishing, and scoring points. I mean, that was something that was a timeless quote back then to me. And it's still, I still remember it. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday when I was a freshman in high school and read that. So, you know, that's the reality of the Foxcatcher situation. You know, DuPont was the furthest thing from my mind. I mean, they needed to put him in an electric chair on the spot, in my opinion, and be done with him or put a bullet in his head. And, you know, that's where I was at with that. But as far as sticking together and bringing the things that Dave Schultz himself defined was what was important to myself and Alger and Tom, you know, and a handful of other guys, Rob Cole, I think, and, you know, a handful of other guys.
And one thing to consider, too, is this, the interview series that led to the film was a year and a half ago. So Foxcatcher, the 30 for 30s, the Mark Schultz's book, they hadn't come out yet. So this probably wasn't fresh in the mind. You'd probably have to do some digging to find that situation from 96. So I guess that might explain why it wasn't in the film, because, again, it was a year and a half ago, which was probably still several months before Foxcatcher and the other documentaries had come out.
Yeah, most of the interviewing was done in the summer of 2014, I believe it was, if I have my math right on that. And yeah, you're right. But like I said, I'll talk about it. I mean, you want to talk about Foxcatcher, let's talk. The club was USA Wrestling, he was their single biggest sponsor at one point in time. They knew he was going to kill somebody. They knew that. The athletes that were in Foxcatcher knew that he was going to kill somebody. Then why are you there? Why are you a part of that? That's to me, that's the crazy part. That's the blood money part. You know, the blood money part is that after it's done and you're trying to, you know, bond together as a program and a team, and you got a gal like Bev Collier, who's, you know, all she was trying to do was help the athletes get through a very, very difficult time.
Rather than going down that rabbit hole at this moment, maybe that's a topic for another program. But first of all, Terry, I appreciate the openness on that. Now, I did have a couple questions from some folks out in the wrestling world about maybe the content that was featured, not necessarily the filming part of it. Ben Askren was asking about Kendall Cross in 96. And did you consider Kendall a real threat, or did you overlook him potentially when you look back on things?
Mose definitely did not overlook him. Did not overlook him. Kendall Cross is, first of all, he was a returning Olympic team member from 92. Second of all, he had beat me a couple of times and put me on the backside of those ladders in I think in 95, and then in 96 at the U.S. Open, he had beaten me. I did not overlook anybody. I never have overlooked anybody. I have prepared for everybody to my utmost ability to get ready for anybody. And I know in the interview they asked about that, and Kendall Cross was on the same level as DeBeer and Tali and Umakanov and Gia Cicerie and all those guys. He was on the same level there. There's no question about that.
Andy Ross up in Canada notices with the exception of your last statement, because you did name some names there, when you explain opponents and you talk about whether you're coaching, we've got Iran coming up, we've got Russia, we've got Bulgaria. And when you were talking about your matches, the Russian, the Mongolian, the Turk, is it something, is that just a manner of speaking, or is it something that those names are fresh in your mind? You're just saying, just for semantics, you say the country instead of the athlete's name.
Well, like I just said, I mean, Tali, a lot of guys aren't going to know who Tali was. Tali was a guy that Kolot got involved with there when he moved up out of 58 kilo there. DeBeer, Ali Raja DeBeer, Bagauddin Umakanov, those are names that people probably don't recognize, but they'd recognize a short, squatty guy from Russia as Umakanov, that had a great arm throw, those kind of things. So, no, it's not where I'm just exaggerating that it's either Turkey or Mongol. I mean, the Mongol was tough. He was a really, really, really fierce competitor at that weight. I think he was third in 93. Those kind of things. And you know them by face, you know them by name, you know them by lead leg, you know them by cauliflower ear side, you know them by a lot of things.
Andrew Farah in Virginia asks about how you respect an opponent internationally and share that bond through competition and wrestling, even though you won't speak the same language, like the admiration and respect for the Iranians. How do you derive that with that language barrier?
They know. There's a nod of the head, like, hey, good to see you. They know enough English and things where when you shake your hand, they shake their hand and they love world champions. The funny thing about that is they know that I train with Dennis Hall, and every time I'm over in Russia or in Iran or something, they go, Dennis Hall, and then they make they put the fingers together, that combat sign of putting the fingers together, like we're wrestling now, that kind of stuff. So they know that there's respect. I mean, number one, I respect everybody. It's that old timeless biblical principle, respect everybody, fear none. And that's how I went forward. I know that, I learned a lot of that from being around Dennis and training with my brother and being coached by Gable. And, that's just something that's part of you as a competitor.
I want to go to Dennis now. Dennis, do you have any questions in regarding to the film For Terry, something that maybe you guys haven't talked about, anything out there that you're kind of curious about?
Yeah, I mean, like at the, when he was struggling in 99 after he pulled out of the world championships, what did they talk about there?
What did who talk about?
What did the film, did they go into depth on that part?
The interview, I basically said that, people say I was injured and I wasn't injured. I believe I told Bader that my injury was in my head and I wasn't right. I wasn't.
But you didn't know. You didn't. I mean, at that
no,
point,
I think
you
I
didn't
knew.
Know if it was in the head or the body.
I think I knew. I mean, obviously you know. And when you've been through something and then you're trying to get ready for something and something's not right, but there's really nothing that they can find. You know, like those blackout beers. I remember training in 99 over at Paris at the table and blacking out in those quarter mile sprints we were doing. And that, you know, it's probably something that I brought onto myself is how I look at it. And, you know, that's
It's just, I mean, that's the interesting part is, you know, the blacking out and how the mind was working at that time. Did they delve into the mind process on how you were thinking and, you know, how you actually feared for your life that you thought you might end up dying?
Yeah, and that's probably, you know, an over exaggeration on my part. Maybe that was my way of getting out of competing, you know, and that's where the honesty part has to come in. And you know what? We're never going to know. The bottom line is that you're in that situation, and I probably should have taken some days off at that point. And that's another part of the interview that I elaborated on was that training piece and learning how to take a time, the day off.
How to take a break.
And I didn't know how to do that in 99. I didn't know how to do that in 90. I didn't know how to do that in 97, I think you remember some of those times.
No, I remember all the conversations. Exactly.
Yeah, you're crazy. You're wrestling this guy for that long. I mean, you were telling me that I was nuts. And if Dennis Hall's telling me I'm nuts, I know I'm nuts because you're nuts.
Circle over to John now. Questions for Terry about the film.
Well, it seemed like you maybe went through, you said you blacked out with that Kerry Bowman's match and then you kind of overcame it. I don't know if that was the same kind of blackout or if it was a different type, if it was weight cutting or mental or if it was just nerves of that type of nature. But do you remember saying that you blacked out in the Bowman's match that you won?
I don't only remember saying it, I remember it. I remember coming to. And all I remember is that I was on my face, and then I woke up and I had his leg. And I've never seen the film, but I ended up scrambling to a takedown somehow. And I remember running off after that was right at the end of the match. And I remember running off and then just kind of in, out, in, out, in, out. And my elbow was kind of backwards, kind of flopping. And that's when I went to Stover, and then we had that long, you know, 6 or 7 hour break before that next match. That was a lot of work that was being done in there. But yeah, that was definitely a one of those things like, whoa, you know, I don't know how I caught his leg. I don't know how I did it. I mean, he was around me, you know, the way that I hit the mat with my head, he was around me. And it wasn't that I got blacked out because I got knocked out. It was, you know, I was exhausted and I was fighting. I was trying to find energy where maybe there wasn't any energy there, you know, that kind of a thing. So.
The day after, did you kind of just thank God and just, did you kind of feel like you, it was almost like you overcame so much? I mean, you must have almost.
No, it wasn't almost, the next day, John. It was the next second.
The next second.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it was, you know, God definitely had his hand in all of this. And, you know, I believe that. And I wasn't connected when I wasn't doing well. You know, with a lot of the adversity that was being thrown at me, my relationship with God was rocky. You know, I thought I had all the answers, you know, and I was pissed off and bitter at the world for something that I, you know, it was, you know, my own fault, my own problem of not making the 96 Olympic team. And I carried it to a really, really unhealthy level. And so that's the part that I had to get right. And, you know, when that part was right, I was on track again.
And it just the other thing, Jason, I like the story of he named his daughter Sydney, and then now his son is wrestling. But as a dad, he talks about, you know, unless his son asks some questions, you know, Nelson asks some questions, he gives him space, and it's not like a dad trying to fill unfilled dreams of his son. But, you know, Terry, can you talk about that relationship with your son and his wrestling and how you're going about that as a dad?
It's, our relationship is solid. You know, when he asks me questions, they're very, the answer is left with ambiguity because I want him to figure it out. So I'll give him ideas in my answer, but really it's open-ended questions back at him that he figures out. And we got a great relationship, and he wrestles hard. You know, he goes forward, and he wrestles hard. He wrestles aggressive, and you know, it's entertaining. I very much enjoy watching him wrestle, and that's really all there is to it for me. You know, you're going to go out and do something, let's do it, like put fans in the stands, you know, and he does that. So that's where I'm at with him, and he's got a long way to go. He's got a long way to go before we get, you know, into the next thing. But he's fun to watch for me as a dad. I am very, very entertained when I watch him wrestle.
Mm-hmm. Exciting to watch it unfold. God, faith, and family and wrestling.
Yeah.
We've been talking with Terry Brands, John McGovern, and Dennis Hall about the Terry documentary that came out on Flow Wrestling. If you have not seen it yet, go to flowwrestling.org. It's part of their Flow Pro offering. It is a subscription rate. I believe it's $20 a month, but you get their entire library of live streamed events, the documentary series, and get Terry's final thoughts on, you know, maybe the whole opening up process. You guys went through this once with the season and ESPN. And I guess maybe compare the two scenarios in you know, having Iowa kind of being the center of it, but you kind of taking the lead on the Terry documentary, and then compared to maybe what access ESPN got back in the day.
Well, I think what Dennis said was, I guess Dennis and John both said it, and I think that's the important thing, is the thing that Flow Wrestling has done is they've let you get to know people. They got, you can, you want to know Burroughs, all you got to do is get on Flow, type in his name, and listen to him talk. And you can get a glimpses into his mindset, glimpses into his preparation, how he handles himself, how he handles life, how he handles his family, how he handles his wrestling, how he handles his training, all those things. And really, that's what it became to me, is, you know, when I was talking with Martin, was he was, hey, you know, you can help the sport of wrestling. And okay, let's go then. You know, that's where I was at with that. So, you know, that's really what it's about, is the next generation and the youngsters coming up and you know, advancing humanity forward is what I always say. And that's really what it should be about.
This has been episode 23 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Defense Soap, and you can find out everything about the World Wrestling Resource, its camp system, and all the things offered by going to worldwrestlingresource.com. So for John McGovern, Dennis Hall, and Terry Brands, my name is Jason Bryant. Thanks for subscribing. We'll see you next time.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.